Hello and welcome to The Brand Called You. I'm Sandeep Tyagi, your host. Today, the brand we are speaking with is Sanjay Kacharia. Sanjay is the founder CEO of Trinus, which is a technology consulting firm. He lives in Los Angeles and was educated at University of Mumbai, USC, as well as Harvard. Welcome to the show, Sanjay.
Thank you, Sandeep, for having me.
Let's start with your professional journey. You set up a company now many years ago called Trinus, which is a technology consulting firm. Tell us more about the company. What does it do? And what do you focus on?
Thank you. So Trinus is a company I set up earlier on in my working life, in 1995. It was a company that at that time was a way to venture out essentially from the job I was working in, and you know, this is in the mid 90s. Data was just, you know, as an asset was just being recognized, not quite in the same manner that it is today. And I was always a data guy. I was always somebody who loved data and data modeling, and it connected me to the business aspect of things versus being a purely technical, you know, C programmer, which I was at that time. So it was a very natural shift for me to move into data, and data analytics is what we call it today. So I started the company back in 95, focused on at that time business intelligence and data warehousing and all of that. And then over the years, of course, the field has evolved, has become much more sophisticated. And we as a company have evolved as well. So we've grown our data analytics practice over the years. We cover the full gamut now of data analytics, everything from 80% of the job is around data, working with the data, cleansing it and prepping it for analytics, for consumption, to, of course, the consumption itself and driving value from that information you create. But along the way, we've also added other practices as well.
Okay. Now, you were fairly young when you started this. I think you had only been working for a few years. How did it come about? What prompted you to go venture out and start your own company at that young an age?
So there is, you know, there are probably a few stories which are common for people who start the company. Sometimes it is, you know, I didn't have anything else to do. In my case, it was, you know, there was this desire that I wanted to be on my own. Two was I had to make you know, a bit more money because I had for whatever reason I decided, I think, starting a company and then taking on a mortgage and having a baby as well were all really good to do all at the same time, and that was really for me the driver was one. I wanted to be on my own. I wanted to be financially independent. That was important for me. But I think ultimately over time, it has changed. That has changed to really creating something of value, something that perhaps outlasts me. So over time, that journey has shifted, that the purpose has shifted for me personally. But certainly at the beginning, it was all about let's do something that would excite me.
Yeah. Well, I could relate to that. I started about the same time when I just bought a house. My son was just born. Was the year that I founded the company. So can relate to that journey specifically that you mentioned. Name Trinus is not a word I have heard. So what's the story? How did you come up with that?
So when I founded the company, it was called SRS Consulting Group, Inc., which was, you know, there are probably, you know, 31 of those out there. And SRS were really the initials of, you know, my family members at that time. At that time, myself, my wife, and my daughter, my firstborn. And then a couple of years down the road, now this is 1997. I was thinking, well, this is SRS is a mouthful. There are 20, you know, so many of them out there. Need something pithy, something a little unique, and something with a domain name available. And so I did a lot of, that was important. So I did a lot of research and came up with this name. It's Latin. It's a Latin word, I would say, a derivative or a the meaning is Trinity.
Okay.
And it seemed to resonate in a variety of different ways. For me, that somebody comes from a Sanatan Dharma tradition, a Hinduism tradition, it's a Trinity, of gods. For somebody who's born in the Catholic faith would identify with Trinity as well. And certainly from a business perspective, really, it was the three key stakeholders for us, our clients, our employees, and our partners. We were not thinking shareholders at that time because it was just me and myself. But it was really those three stakeholders for us who really were the Trinity of what made Trinus possible.
I see. Very interesting. Interesting. I think the website availability has defined so many names of the companies that were set up around that time or later, that is itself a story. You've also spent a fair bit of time with many organizations, I noticed, like Thai and YPO and CEO. What drives you? What do you get out of these associations, and how do you see them fitting into your journey?
So I think a lot of that, the roots of that lie with what I observed with my father and my uncle. They were both individually successful in their businesses. And at the same time, they found the time to give back, to contribute, to be part of a larger community. Consistently, I saw that as I was growing up with both of them. And I think that stayed with me. And so when I got to the point where I felt comfortable enough to spend a little bit of time outside Trinus, I was looking for platforms that I could participate and be a part of. And Thai was the one that popped up first back in 99. Something that I gravitated to very naturally, very instantaneously. It was up in Silicon Valley. I'm in Los Angeles. It was very close enough. It was founded by a bunch of Indian entrepreneurs to help promote entrepreneurship, which I liked the idea of, to promote entrepreneurship, to help people build businesses. So that was the reason for me attaching myself to Thai. And I really spent a lot of time, gave a lot of my time to Thai, eventually becoming the president of the Thai Southern California chapter. And then as it happens, one of my things is really I have to be involved. I spend a little bit of time with one particular organization for some amount of time and then have to move on to something else because things get a little stale at some point. I'm not learning. I'm not contributing as much as I was previously. So that's when I found YPO accidentally through a Thai member, incidentally. And I gravitated again instantly to YPO again as an organization of peers. And I've had a ball of a time. I'm still a member of YPO. I've had a ball of a time. I chaired the Technology Network and the Doing Business Globally Network. Gave a ton to those two networks and to YPO. And I learned so much through working with YPO, but also interacting with my peers there. I also became a member of CEO, Chief Executives Organization, which is sort of the next natural progression, if you would, for a YPO member. Certainly a different flavor, for sure. I'm still a new member, so I'm still learning, discovering. But I think the underlying theme really is a phrase that my father shared with me from Swami Vivekananda, which really is the underlying theme of whatever I've done, which is, and it goes like this, now that you've come into this world, leave a mark behind. Mm. Otherwise, what is the difference between you and the trees and the stones? They also come into existence, decay and die. And so for me, it was not, even though Swami Vivekananda talks about a mark, the mark is not so much about making a name for myself, but to make a difference in the community I live in. So for me, it's been an amazing journey through all these different organizations. You mentioned some of them. There are others that that I've been a part of as well. Mm-hmm. But all of these have been amazing parts of my journey to help me grow as an individual, to help me to connect me with people, like-minded people like yourself, for instance. And it's been very, very rewarding for me personally.
Yeah. No, that's good. I think it's sometimes viewed as maybe only a networking opportunity or only a business development, which I find is a very narrow view. So it's kind of good to hear different perspectives. In each one of them, you also chose to serve all these are voluntary organizations. They're not paid positions, but you chose to serve in some kind of an official capacity as well, helping put together programming and effort. Say some more. Does that help enrich the experience? Did it take a lot of time? How did you balance that with the need of growing business and family?
Yes, and very difficult. Yes, it was very enriching, personally for me. It was just amazing to see what I could do. In some ways, I tested my own boundaries. For instance, I put up two conferences back to back in my 2 years as the president, and each one I pushed the envelope for each of those. The first one I did, it was a 1 day conference. The second year I did it, made it a 2 day conference with a stellar lineup of speakers and so on and so forth. And again, it wasn't just me. It was a fantastic bunch of other like-minded volunteers that participated to make this happen. So I learned quite a bit in terms of how to put these events together and how to deliver value. As much as I think of delivering value from a business perspective through Trinus, it was equally important to be able to deliver value because people are coming and spending their time and money on these conferences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was certainly that. It certainly helped me meet, as I said earlier, like-minded people. And those have become some of my best friends along the way in my life journey. It certainly was challenging because it did take time. I'm one of those people, when I get involved with something, I go all in. Therefore, that's the reason I pick one at a time and just go all into that. Otherwise, I don't like it to be a half-hearted, just do a little bit, put my name out there kind of exercise. So for me, I think it has been challenging, certainly on the personal front, because it took time away. And so, it was very important to have a family that was understanding and a wife who was really very, very supportive of this, of all these, crazy things that I end up doing from time to time. And that I perhaps will never stop doing.
Yeah. No, I definitely get into trouble doing some of these things with, it's difficult to explain sometimes, but some of them are really good with family. I think many of YPO and even Thai with its global events is friendly to families as well. Let's change gears a little bit to the personal side of your journey. Tell us, where were you born? What was your childhood like?
So I was born in Mumbai. It was Bombay back then, but Mumbai, India. I grew up in a very, I'll just say, a middle class family. My father was a chartered accountant. He had he worked for a couple of firms before he started his own company, his own chartered accountancy firm. And so I saw that as well. I mean, there was an entrepreneurial bug that I perhaps picked up from him as well.
So it's in your blood. You had definitely seen it growing up.
Yeah, I saw it certainly growing up. And it was, and I saw the trials and tribulations as well. So it was never a smooth ride. And I think it was good to see that, to observe and to absorb that it's never a straight path and it's very bumpy. And I've got I'm the youngest in my family of four. So I've got two older sisters and an older brother. All three of them went through schools in Bombay as I did, with the exception that I spent 6 years in a boarding school. So that boarding school experience did impact me tremendously in various ways.
Where was this?
That was in Panchkani. It's a hill station in Maharashtra, a school called Sanjeevan Vidyalaya. Very much a, you know, it was modeled on a British prep school, if you will, mm-hmm. but with a very Indian touch, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so it was very rooted in Indian culture. So we celebrated festivals, Ganesh Chaturthi and so on and so forth. So we were very rooted in Indian culture. That was a big part as well of the experiences that have made me who I am today, is that connection to that culture. So I grew up, you know, between Bombay and Panchkani, went to school. High school was in Bombay, 11th and 12th grade, which is junior college, as we call it in India. And then my undergrad was in computer engineering, again, University of Bombay. And then I worked a year in India before coming to the US for my master's. But what was interesting was, as growing up years was, you know, we grew up in the six of us, right? My parents and my three siblings and myself, six of us grew up in a one bedroom apartment in India. I was there for the first 10, 11 years of my life. And what's interesting is that, you know, when I think of where I am today and where my kids live today, and I think of how it was back then, I do not remember for an instant, for a moment, that we felt we were missing anything or that we didn't have anything. Mm-hmm. And I think that was also an important aspect of growing up in that environment was not being appreciative, but to recognize what is available to you, what is out there that's available to you, versus looking for what's not, what are the gaps. So focusing much more on the all the beautiful things that we were surrounded with, the sibling relationships, all the fights and everything else, the closeness of neighbors, all of those things that I think I really grew up not realizing at that time, but I just enjoyed it. But today I look back and say, I really appreciate what I went through at that time.
So how come you were the only one who ended up going to a boarding school? Were you the naughty one or were you the really promising one?
Yeah, that was it. I was the naughty one. I was, you know, I think as this was, I went to boarding school in fifth grade. Up to the fourth grade, I was a terror, essentially. Hmm. Up to the third grade, I would say. In the fourth grade, something changed. I was put into some extra tutoring classes. Mm-hmm. And there's this teacher of mine who was my extra, my teacher who taught me, did the extra tutoring with me, Mrs. Gonzalez. She really made a dramatic difference in my life at that point. And each of us, we can go through our trace our lives and say, what is that one moment, one person, one thing that really shifted the trajectory? And for me, it was Mrs. Gonzalez at that point in time. In my life, where I was this a terror who was underperforming. I was at the bottom of the class consistently every year until the fourth grade. And then I was, my father said, enough is enough. This kid needs to get some extra tutoring. And she completely shifted my life path. And so I went from the bottom of the class to top of the class within that year. And I think I was already doing well, but I don't know what my dad was thinking, but he said, well, I think we can perhaps continue that journey for him by putting him into boarding school. So he really straightens up and perhaps toughens up as well. And that's why I was sent to boarding school. And my brother got the raw deal because he was 4 years older than me. And because I was 10 years old at that time, he was shipped off with me to keep an eye on me. So my brother keeps reminding me to this day that he got the raw end of this deal. He had to go to boarding school. He was a nice, quiet one, scholarly one, but he paid the price for my shenanigans.
I see. So what was the magic that Mrs. Gonzalez did that transformed you from bottom to the top of the class in 1 year?
Tough love, literally. The first day, I remember this, I can see it in my mind's eye. The first day I was to go to her for my extra tutoring after our normal classes are over. I was in the 4B grade and she was the teacher for 4A. So I had to cross over the hallway into 4A, and I went up to her and she said, well, show me your notebooks. You know, we used to have notebooks. So I used to scribble down everything that the teacher taught, right? Mm-hmm. And so I opened my notebooks up and everything was blank. And she looked at it and she, and this is, we're talking, you know, circa 1974. She pulled out two wooden rulers. You remember those foot rulers? She pulled out two of those. She told me to stand beside her desk facing the class. There are a few other students who are taking extra tutoring classes with her. And she gave me a few on my calf. And I can still remember tears rolling down my cheeks, but nothing would come out of my mouth. And then she told me at that time, now go over and get one of your classmates' notebooks and bring it with you and copy those down. And that was the system at that time, right? Corporal punishment and all of that. I mean, today, of course, you know, she would have been banned by now.
Right.
But at that time, this was par for the course, right? So this is what happened. And I think I think to my fortune, I responded positively to that. And I went with it. And as I started improving academically, her demeanor towards me changed as well. And she used to shower me with love. She used to hug me. She used to bake cookies. She used to bring cookies. She used to invite me home and she used to feed me and all of that. So it was truly that tough love, which is she gave me the toughness when I needed it. And she also showered me with love when it was earned, I would say.
Very interesting. Later in life, any memorable event as you built your business where a moment of failure or moment of tough situation really transformed your journey?
I would say there were several. Usually, you know, there are always in a business like mine and perhaps like ours, I would say. It's usually something to do with the customers or the employees. I remember this, when I was leaving the job I was at, the company I was working with, the general manager of the company sat me down for lunch. She did not try to convince me to stay back. But she did say a couple of things. One, and she said, I'll give you two pieces of advice. I'll not tell you how to go win business. You'll figure that out. But I'll tell you this. One, do not get on the wrong side of the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service. And two, watch your finances. And those are things I took to heart. I respected her a lot. I took those to heart. So fortunately, those are things that never became an issue. But certainly, in 2000, post 9/11, 2002, 2001, 2002 timeframe, we had a slight downturn in the economy. But my company took a bigger hit. We went down, I think, 30 or 40%. In a matter of a quarter or two. And that was that was now 7 years from when I started the company, first time experiencing this. And it shook me up quite a bit. And that was the first time actually, even though that happened, I did not lay off, but I had to institute salary cuts for people. And I had to really communicate to them that this is something that's necessary. Right now, it was painful to do that, but also to let them know that this was necessary for the company to survive. And almost to the last person, everybody, you know, cooperated. And we were able to bounce back in literally, you know, 5 to 6 months, I would say. In a couple of quarters, we were able to bounce back, and I was able to reinstate everybody's salaries to what they were, where they were. But it was a nice lesson to learn, to an important lesson as well, to that you should be willing to trust your employees and give them, you know, when you think your back is against the wall, and typically when you're a CEO of the company and a founder particularly, the notion is that you're all alone, that there's nobody understand you. And I think that was one of those points in life where I thought this was a, you know, if you take people into confidence and you explain to them what you're dealing with, what your challenges are, that they will step up. And you have to, so to me, that was one of those. There were several others, you know, where we had, well, there's one particular one where we had a client issue. They asked us to rework everything. Well, they asked us to repay the money back because something wasn't done right. Even though the statement of work said, here's what we promised we'd deliver for you, and here's what we did. And of course, you know, the goalposts changed along the way in this particular case, but we still decided to pay back the client, even though there was, you know, we had enough solid ground to not do that. But I think it was important for us to do it at that point with that particular client because, you know, again, you have to, it goes back to choosing, as much as you choose who you marry and all of that, you also want to choose who you do business with. So I think that was another lesson for me, important lesson for me, was you have to also have to choose the companies and that you do business with as well. And fortunately for us, we've been extremely fortunate that with the exception of one or two, maybe in a 27-year history, we've had some of the most wonderful clients we worked with.
You work with large companies, small companies?
We work typically with mid to large size companies and government clients, government organizations. So think of, you know, large medical devices, pharma, biotech companies, insurance companies, fairly large. I mean, these are typically several billions of dollars in revenues. We work with a lot of the local government organizations, the counties, cities, utilities, and so on. So it's a very fairly broad mix of clients we work with.
Sure. Okay, well, now is the fun part. We are going to go through some quick questions. Whatever pops into your mind is the right answer. It has to be quick. Who's the best entrepreneur ever?
I would say, gosh. Okay, I know this is a pop quiz, but there's so many popping in my head.
yeah, well, let's go with the first one.
Let's. I think, I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking Elon Musk, perhaps, even though, you know, he's very controversial.
Right now, yeah.
He's controversial. And the reason I name him is because he has proven his entrepreneurial abilities in such a variety of industries, industries that he had nothing to do, nothing to know about or to do about, and to be able to build substantial enterprises. I think that's tremendous.
Indeed. If you could meet a historical figure for dinner and have any conversation, who would you like to meet and what would you talk about?
You know, I've thought about that question previously as well, and I've had different answers. But today, my answer is Arjun.
Hmm.
And
Arjun of Gita fame.
Yes, mm-hmm. The warrior prince, mm-hmm. The archer prince, mm-hmm. Yeah. And the reason is he was with God for such a long time, and perhaps did not recognize that. And that moment on the battlefield when he had all these doubts, worries in his mind about whether he should go to war with his cousins and uncles and family or not, he was able to surrender himself it's a very difficult quality to have, to be able to surrender for somebody who's so highly accomplished, to be able to surrender some to some other being. I would have loved to have understood from him, how did he do that? How did he surrender himself to Krishna and let himself be enlightened by Krishna?
Right. Surrender is a tough quality. What's the achievement you're most proud of?
I think it is still a work in progress, but being a father. Being a father of two amazing kids, highly in Hindi we say sanskari.
Tell us more, how old are they? What do they do?
So my older one is Sanjana, my daughter Sanjana. She's 28. She now works with me. She's been working with me for the last 2 years. Even though her background is finance and accounting, worked for PwC, PricewaterhouseCoopers, for 4 years. And before that, graduated from NYU, Stern School of Business, in finance and accounting. So she's like I said, you know, working with me. My son, Siddharth, is 24. He works for Microsoft. He's a computer science grad from USC, computer science and business. And he loves every moment of his job at Microsoft, loves the company and loves his work. And enjoy, thanks to the, you know, the flip side of the pandemic was we got to see our kids because they, you know, they both came home in effect. So we're able to spend a huge amount of time in a phase of life when typically, you know, kids move away. And it was so much fun to be able to spend the kind of time I did, to be able to see them for at least one meal a day. Some, they're busy with their work as well, right? But at least meet them for one meal a day and talk about their work and chat and all of that. But I think when I said, you know, what I'm most proud of is to observe the things that are the culmination of parenting. And I would give my wife a lot more of the credit of seeing that culmination of the parenting, when you hear them speak about certain things or about certain issues or things in life generally, to see how they think been, and how they what they value in their lives. I think it was very heartening for me.
One thing about the world that you're concerned about right now.
I don't know if there's any one particular thing. There are lots of things, of course. But I think to me, the one thing that concerns me a lot more is this this ideological hardening of positions and the ideologies that underlie them. And I think, you know, as I've been a student of philosophy and socialism, I'm not, you know, a formal student as such, but over the last few years, I've been reading quite a bit, observing quite a bit, and this hardening of positions that I've seen, which prevents communication between people, between countries, is something I'm seeing all around. And I think I feel what's important is to get away from ideological positions and take a much more introspective approach versus thinking of everybody, anybody out there that doesn't agree with you as being a bad person or a bad guy, to take an introspective approach and say, which positions have I taken which are so inflexible that I'm not able to even change them when the facts are facing me, are in the face telling me I'm wrong? That to me, I think, is the biggest disease and the biggest problem we have today.
Interesting. If you have a free afternoon, what do you do?
There are a few things I do consistently. I CrossFit. I do CrossFit religiously, even though I come back with a lot of aches and pains. But that's you know, it's a drug, essentially at that point in time. I love walking as well. I find it very, it's meditation. Like anything that you do that takes you out of your mind, so to speak, your thinking mind, which is what CrossFit is for me, which is what walking is for me. I love reading as well, and reading different topics. I rarely read anything on an afternoon that would be related to my work. It's mostly related to my interests, including Sanatan Dharma. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Well, we've come to the end of this brief talk, but the last question is the most important. What is Brand Sanjay Kucheria in your own words?
I would hope that that Sanjay Kucheria would be remembered, because brand is all about recall. Mm-hmm. I would hope Sanjay Kucheria would be remembered as somebody who worked to make himself a better person. And only with that would he be able to make this world a better place.
Mm. Okay. Very Gandhian way of saying, be the change you want to see in the world. Thank you so much for spending time and sharing your journey with us, Sanjay. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Sandeep.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.